Now, the government has announced a new £500 million funding package that will be invested in next-generation testing technology and increased testing capacity for COVID-19. At the same time, public health experts have expressed concern that new spikes in coronavirus could go undetected because increased demand for tests has led to the government rationing appointments and sending people here, there and everywhere to get tested, in some cases up to 100 miles away. Resources are being focused on current areas of concern, which is leading to a shortage of slots elsewhere. Professor Bertie Squire, as we mentioned, is the Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, also Honorary Consultant in Infectious Diseases at the Royal. Bertie, good to have you with us once again. Thursday rolls around pretty quickly. I've just mentioned that new pot of cash, £500 million investment into increased testing for COVID. This is swab-based, as far as I understand, which is something that was being tested at the School of Tropical Medicine.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for having me on again. What the government has announced this morning is more money for trials which are looking at a number of different aspects of testing for SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19. And there are sort of three things. One is tests which are based on saliva, which is so much easier to take than the swabs from the back of the throat and the nose. The second is tests which give a faster turnaround time for results to become available. And these can be based on saliva or swab samples. And the third thing is an assessment of whether repeat testing, i.e. testing how regular repeats, for example, testing people once a week, see if that leads to earlier detection of cases, allowing them to self-isolate quicker. And yes, you're right to remember that colleagues at LSTM's Centre for Drugs and Diagnostics have been looking at faster diagnostics. Back in July, Dr. Emily Adams was talking about the work they'd done, showing that saliva could be used instead of swabs.
How important is testing and retesting, Bertie, the same areas? And does more testing actually mean more infections, either way you look at it?
Yeah, so overall, this push towards testing and retesting emphasizes how important it is that new infections are identified early, people notified quickly, and then able to self-isolate before they transmit. It does mean that more infections will be detected, which may show up in the numbers being reported. But in the long run, it should mean fewer actual real infections because the chains of transmission will be interrupted. Hope that makes sense.
No, it did make sense. Looking at the figures, I mean, if we look more, and we've talked about this before, if we're testing more, we're going to find more. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get people who are going to become seriously ill. Can I just ask, is the virus at the moment, has it lost its potency at this stage?
So I don't think we have evidence that it's lost its potency. What I think we're seeing is that two things. There is more testing, so we're detecting more cases that are mild that we might have missed earlier. And secondly, I think there's been more mixing, particularly amongst younger people, as the restrictions have been eased. And those younger people tend not to get severe infection, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So I think it's not the virus that's become less potent. It's the manner in which we're detecting cases.
Right, and it's the people who you're finding the virus in. Obviously, you mentioned it affects people in different ways depending on their age. Let's just talk about quarantine as well. I mean, the list for our usual holiday destinations it seems to be changing by the day, really, and rises in cases we're seeing across Europe. Is that simply down to opening of borders and the movement of people, which would bring me onto schools and universities as well, when we're talking about the movement of people? But we can't, it's impractical, isn't it, you know, to get everybody just to stay in the same place until this thing is over.
Absolutely. I think, you know, some movement of people is part of our daily lives. I think that the rises in cases in some European countries is down to both the easing of restrictions within countries and the opening of borders. For example, people have been able to travel to holiday destinations, and when they get to those holiday destinations, they'll inevitably come into contact with more people than if they'd stayed at home, for example, through visiting bars and restaurants. Mm. So yes, it is about movement of people.
And schools returning this week, teachers in, a lot of the children back today for their first day as well. And some parents are still nervous, but in the main, children and young people and most parents seem relieved and positive about it. So what's some good advice for parents and young people over the next coming weeks and months as the nights start to draw in and the temperature drops a bit?
Okay, so I think for young people, I think the advice is to listen to and act on the advice that teachers and adults in schools are giving on maintaining social distance. For example, in corridors, they will have set up arrangements, and continue to concentrate on regular and thorough hand washing. But most importantly, enjoy being back at school and catching up with the learning. For parents, I think it's about backing up the advice for young people and also being vigilant for symptoms. So if they notice that young people or family members get symptoms of fever or headache, it's important for them not to go to school and for the family to self-isolate and get tested on that advice. So I think those are the two ways I'd look at it.
And just anecdotally, and I've had several conversations like this, we don't seem to be seeing people, or as many people, with the usual coughs and sneezes and sniffles that we get at this time of the year. Now, it's anecdotal. I don't know whether there's any evidence to suggest that because we're a lot cleaner now and we're gelling and we're social distancing, that, you know, the old bugs that have been around for many, many years, we seem to be fending those off. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I think it's reasonable for us to hope that that's the case because of less mixing, because of more care about coughs and sneezes and changes in behaviour. I would be a bit cautious about saying we yet know that to be the case. It's a bit early in the season, but there's good reason to hope. Yes, if we do this, then the transmission of the usual viruses that cause coughs and colds should also go down. That's for sure.
And we have to let you go because we're almost out of time, but we always look forward to your crumb of comfort this week. Bertie, what have you got for us?
So, thank you. As you know, I like to bring in a comment about the wider world in addition to Liverpool. And I'm often in contact with our colleagues who work in Africa. And the thing that strikes me from the conversations with those colleagues in a number of countries, actually, in Africa, is that the numbers of cases are rising there, but the numbers of severe cases are not that bad. And I think it emphasizes the point I was making earlier, that younger people, and those African countries often have generally younger populations, don't get as severe manifestations of the infections. So that's my crumb of comfort. Numbers rising, but not as bad as we might have been worried about.
Is that because we know a little bit more than we did 3 or 4 months ago about the virus?
Well, I think it's the population structure is different, and I think we are, you know, countries are getting a bit prepared, and so a number of different factors, but thankfully maybe not hitting quite as badly as it might have done in those African countries.
Bertie, always a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for joining us once again, and we'll speak to you hopefully this time next week. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
There he is, Professor Bertie Squire. I'm going to give him his full moniker again. Dean of Clinical Sciences. Time this. How long is it? I think he's got the longest title.
Go!
Bertie Squire, Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, also Honorary Consultant in Infectious Diseases at the Royal Liverpool Hospital. How long?
11 seconds.
He's got an 11-second title. Wow. Look at you, Kat Mack. Oh. Half a second. Tony Snell, 3/4 of a second.
No, we're nobodies.
Not bad. Steve Coleman, that's a second.
He gets an extra bit there.
He gets an extra bit there. Yeah, he likes that. But 11 seconds on your title. That's...
You know you're important.
And I didn't read that. I didn't read that slow.
No.
I didn't read it fast. I did it right mid-tempo.
Measured it was. Oh, we'll miss Bertie when we don't speak to him every week. It's like our weekly check-in.
Just get him to come in.
Yeah.
Pay-per-view.
Get him in person.
Get him in person. And, yeah, what could he do? Bit of juggling. It'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure he's a man of many talents.
Well, he's good at testing, so we could get him to test all the electrical equipment in the building.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, head of yellow stickers. There you go.
The little pad testing things health going
and safety,
around.
The little pad test, yellow stickers, happy days. Oh, we could actually get somebody in called Pat Test.